Welcome to The Mental Breakdown, where we tackle all issues related to mental health, mental illness, parenting, schooling, relationships, and everything in between. While Drs. Bernie and Richard will provide the most up-to-date ideas and perspectives, the information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for medical care. Our goal here at The Mental Breakdown is to provide you with information to help you make your life the best it can be. So without further ado, here's Dr. Bernie and Dr. Richard. Welcome to episode 22 of The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
Dr. Richard, it has begun. The school year is underway. How exciting.
It is in full bloom.
And students are already feeling the effects. It doesn't take long.
Right.
Traffic is horrible.
Yes, it does. Traffic does increase.
I had to take a trip to Tampa yesterday, and I believe that it took me longer to get 3 miles from I-75 to USF than it took me to get the 15 miles down I-4. Because of the traffic related to schools. But everybody's there now.
It's another one of those adjustments that we have to make. We talked last week about making these adjustments to the school year.
Right.
And that's another one. You have to remember that at 7 o'clock in the morning, the streets are pretty congested. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they get congested again. And so we have to make all these adjustments once school begins. And we're going to talk more about adjustments this morning.
Yes, we are. Because an interesting phenomenon has happened. You know, as we were getting primed and ready for the school year up, you know, the few weeks before school started, a lot of our patients and a lot of people that we talked to, a lot of students, the anxiety was beginning as it relates to testing and some of those expectations for the school year. But that changed, interestingly enough. Once the school year started, we started hearing other concerns. Mm-hmm. And one of the main concerns that we've heard about is sleep. Students are tired.
Students are tired, right.
Mm-hmm. And
not just high school students.
Right.
Even elementary school students are complaining about being tired.
Yeah, they're really having a hard time. And again, surprisingly, it's middle school students. Mm-hmm. Now, in our area, a lot of middle schools don't start until about 9 o'clock in the morning, we'll talk about some of that stuff in a little bit. But mm-hmm. middle schools don't start until 9 o'clock, and so those students can sleep a little bit later, sometimes 1 or 2 hours later. Mm-hmm. But they're still complaining about being tired.
Right.
So we're going to talk today about a very, very important part of our life, and that is sleep. It's often bypassed, it's often ignored, it's often assumed, but sleep is a very important part of our life.
You know, when you make, that's an excellent point. When you read the literature on sleep, when you read the sleep experts around the country, they frequently use the phrase, parents need to protect their child's sleep just as they protect their safety.
Right.
It's that important.
Right.
But it's one of those things that we don't think much about. We tend to ignore it or assume that everything is okay when it comes to sleep. Such may not be the case.
Right, right. Yeah, when we think about overall mental health and even physical health,
right.
there are three huge factors that are implicated. Stress. Mm-hmm. Which we've talked about before, diet,
right.
Which we plan to talk about a lot more.
And we need to talk more about diet.
Yeah.
You know, one of the common things people say is, and I'm sorry for interrupting, but we talk about sugar, the effects of sugar. Well, it's not really the sugar sugar begins a cascade effect.
Right, right.
But there's a great deal about diet that we really need to talk about in these podcasts.
I agree.
Sorry for interrupting. You were making three points.
Right.
Stress,
diet, and the third one is sleep.
Sleep.
Okay. Sleep has a tremendous impact on our, not only our mental health, but our physical health, our relationships, so our social health, our social-emotional health. Sleep is critical. And so we're going to spend today's podcast talking about sleep. Now, as I said before, and Richard, you've known me for a long time, I've always been the type of person that, you know, if we could go without sleep, I would be first in line.
I'd be second.
Because, you know, we think about those hours, and, you know, a lot of us who you know, we lead busy lives. Mm-hmm. We think about those 8 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours or so that in some ways are we feel are wasted.
That's right.
Because we're not spending that time, all the work that we could get done during that time. But what we know from the research and what we know about sleep in general is that those hours aren't wasted. Those hours are spent rejuvenating our brain, rejuvenating our emotions, so that we can then function better the next day and we can actually get the work done that we need to get done.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned the three things to maintain health are stress, diet, and sleep.
Right.
And yet when we want to, those of us who tend to work more hours than we should, mm-hmm. wherever we are,
right.
Whatever our field is, whatever our job is, what do we give up in order to work more hours? We give up exercise, so there's more stress.
Right.
We give up eating properly, there goes right. your diet, and we give up sleep.
Yeah.
So we tend to give up the three things that we need the most to maintain good mental health.
Yeah.
And physical health.
That's a great point.
Irony.
Yes. And then we suffer from it.
Right.
We suffer physically with medical conditions that we know are associated with improper balance of those three factors.
Right.
And we give up our mental health. We become overworked. We become stressed. We become
moody,
burned out,
irritable.
All those things that we know happen when we don't take care of ourselves in the way that we need to. So, I agree. We need to talk more about diet, but today we're going to focus on sleep and hopefully give everyone listening a little bit of information that either maybe you already knew, but just as a refresher, or maybe provide you with some information that you really weren't sure about before.
Good.
So let's start out talking about what is sleep. And I think that the best way to start that conversation is to say that, you know, when we think about neurological arousal, right. how your brain is working, that's how we evaluate various levels of alertness. And sleep is basically a level of alertness.
Right.
It's a very low level of alertness, but it is a level nonetheless. And when we look at the differences between times when we're awake and the various stages, because there are five stages of sleep, when we look at the various stages of sleep, what differentiates all of these is brain waves, how our brain is functioning. So let's talk first about what are some of the differences in our brain that differentiates different levels of sleep?
Right. Well, the issue of sleep. Sleep is a how do you define it? How do you define it in your classes? Sleep.
I just like that. I just define it as a different level of arousal, different level of alertness that allows our brain to decrease stimulation from certain sources, so right. that we can then rejuvenate, we can restore, and
but all animals sleep, right?
Right.
Every species sleeps.
Most animals sleep a lot more than we do.
Okay. All right. And so sleep is what we use to restore our brain's energy.
Right. Right.
Okay. So right. we need to sleep in order to restore. It's like recharging batteries.
Correct.
In a car or wherever. So we use sleep to restore. So sleep should be restorative. And in order to do that, it has to slow down.
Right.
Okay, so that's the purpose of sleep. Right.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So what happens is when we talk about the brain's rhythms, during sleep, the high activity, the high electrical activity that we experience during wakefulness slows down during sleep.
Right.
And in fact, the restorative sleep is the slowest activity level.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So when we talk about stages of sleep, what we want to have happen is to go from a very active state, very active brain activity, to a very slow activity.
Right.
And that's what you mean when you say the stages of sleep.
Right. Yeah, I think that a lot of this is related to many myths associated with how our brain works.
Right.
You know, there's the whole idea that our brain, that we only use 10% of our brain. Well, there's really little to no truth of that at all. And that theory, that idea was based upon some very, very old research where, you know, they were working with animals in the labs and they were able to remove portions of the brain of these animals, and the animals continued to function relatively well. And so the researchers concluded in their pre-technological stage that, well, if we can remove these sections of the brain, those areas of the brain must not be useful. And so they can get down to, well, you know, if we remove all of these portions of the brain, the animal can still move around, they can still eat, they can still do some of these things. So that, you know, those major areas of the brain must not be critical. Right. So now, of course, we know that that's not true. When we're looking at neuroimaging techniques and stuff like that, we know that the brain, the entire brain is active most, if not all the time.
Right.
So when we're awake, our entire brain is active, and we have very high levels of various waves, frequency waves, in our brain that's functioning at that time when we're awake.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's important for people to understand when we talk about the activity of the brain that the brain is an electrical organ.
Right.
What's creating all the activity in the brain is electricity.
Right.
And electricity is moving rapidly around the brain all day long.
I think it's fascinating.
Right. It is. It is, because we tend to think of the brain as storing pictures and words, and it doesn't.
Right.
The brain is just filled with electricity, and that electricity is moving around all day long.
Right.
And that's what you have to give a rest. That's what needs a rest, is all that high level of electrical activity that's going on. And you need to sort of quiet that down and give it a chance to rest so that you get ready for the next day.
Right, right. Yeah. So as we wind down, and that electrical activity begins to decrease, we get into the first and then the second stages of sleep.
Right.
And during those stages, we go from lots of alpha and beta waves, that they call it, and we first cut out the beta waves and replace them with something called theta waves. And all of these...
Because beta is the most active.
Right.
Beta means that's the fastest brain activity.
Right.
It's beta. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
you want to go from that...
Right.
And you want to start slowing down.
Right, okay. Right. And so we cut out the beta waves. We add what we call theta waves, which helps us relax. Mm-hmm. And so during the first two stages of sleep, we're just sort of winding down from the alpha and beta to alpha and theta, and then to just theta waves.
So stages one and two are a transition stage.
Right.
From very active to a little less active.
Right, okay. Right. Mm-hmm. And again, the reason that we're mentioning this, not because there's a quiz at the end to ask you what frequency waves are going to be present at different stages, but to let you know, it's very identifiable.
That's right.
You know, when we send people for sleep studies, they hook them up to EEGs, and they watch them sleep overnight, and they can tell what various stages of sleep they get into through the night. And,
right.
And it's very measurable.
Mm-hmm.
So as we wind ourselves down and we get through the second stage of sleep, then we enter into the third and fourth stages of sleep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And those stages are the really good stuff. This is the really deep sleep that is so restorative, so necessary for healthy living. And this is when we get into more delta waves.
Right, that's the delta waves, right.
And those are stages 3 and 4. And so when you're in those stages, that's when it's really tough to wake somebody up. Right. If they do wake up during those stages, they're very groggy, very tired. Especially during stage one, if you wake up during stage one,
right,
no big deal.
And that's, many of our listeners have probably experienced that
right.
For some reason they awaken during REM sleep.
Right.
And they're just kind of tired and groggy and, or not REM sleep, they awaken during stages 3 or 4.
Right.
When they're in that deep, deep sleep.
Right.
For some reason they have a nighttime awakening. And they just feel sort of tired and groggy the next day.
Right.
Because they got up, but they happened to awaken at the wrong time.
Right, right. And then the fifth stage is, as you just mentioned, REM sleep, the rapid eye movement. And what's fascinating about this stage of sleep is that this is when our brain almost looks like it's awake.
Right.
I mean, it's many of the same waves that we see during wakefulness, mm-hmm. that we see during REM sleep.
Right.
The difference is that our brain releases some chemicals during that time to, in essence, paralyze us.
Right.
And it makes it to where our voluntary muscles, our arms and our legs can't move.
Right.
Because otherwise, we would be acting out all of our dreams.
Right.
And this is where we get sometimes sleepwalking, people falling out of bed, people mm-hmm. Talking in their sleep. A lot of that happens during REM sleep because that's right. when we're dreaming, because our brain is just as active as it is when we're awake.
And if you didn't produce those chemicals to paralyze you, we'd have a lot more people falling out of beds
right.
and sleepwalking.
Right.
Be like the Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
We'd all be walking around in our sleep if our body didn't produce that chemical to stop that movement.
Right. And there have been news reports. There have been actually criminal cases of people yeah. doing things during those stages of sleep because their brain doesn't release those chemicals. And they go get in their car and they drive down the road while they are really asleep.
And that's when people talk in their sleep.
Right.
It's probably during REM sleep.
Right.
Because it's close. Now, I have a question. We talk about the transition from wakefulness into stages 1 and 2. Is this the transition back out of sleep, that you go into REM sleep and then you start to approach wakefulness again?
Yeah, that's a great point. That's how that often occurs. Now, mm-hmm. the important thing that we should take from that question is that for many different reasons, we don't go through stages 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 necessarily in that order.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we jump at different times. And this is especially true when people don't get enough sleep. You know that you've probably either experienced it yourself, or you know someone who, you know, is sleep deprived for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. They don't get enough sleep the night before. They have a really tough day at work or whatever. The next night, when they go to sleep, they fall asleep, and very, very quickly, they jump straight to stages 3, 4, or even 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because what our brain tries to do is it really wants to get to stages 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
That's the really good sleep that it needs. And so sometimes we skip around in the different stages, and we'll go from alertness to deep sleep without mm-hmm. necessarily going through them in order. And so it's important to know that we can kind of skip around in these different stages throughout the night.
But is it safe to say that the ideal sleep is to go through these stages?
That's
in
the,
order.
That's ideal, right.
Right, that's the more restorative, healthful sleeping,
right.
is to go through them in order. And that's the important message for parents, is that we want to prepare our children for a healthy night's sleep,
right.
a restorative sleep.
Right. And the way that, again, that the way that it functions is we tend to go through it in cycles through the night. So if we think about it as stages 1 through 5, we'll go through stages 1 through 5 over the course of a couple of hours during our sleep.
Yeah, 90 to 120 minutes.
Right.
Typically.
And
right.
then we... That's when we, you know, after REM sleep, when we get back to like stage 1 to reset mm-hmm. it and start it again,
right.
that's when we are shifting around in bed a little bit. That's when we might recognize, oh, I need to go to the bathroom,
yeah.
those kinds of things. We'll do that, and then we'll start our cycle again.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, 90 to 120 minutes. So in an ideal situation, we go through these 5 stages of sleep about 4 times a night.
And that's what we need.
That's what we need.
The reason that we tell our children you have to sleep for 8 or 9 hours is they have to go through 4 or 5 of these cycles
right.
to get restorative sleep.
Right.
If they only have 3 cycles, they're going to start getting sleep deprived.
Right.
There's going to be a sleep debt
right.
that they're going to pay for
right.
in some way. So that's why we want kids to sleep for about 9 hours a night.
Right.
Even teenagers should be sleeping about 9 hours a night.
Right, right. Okay. But this is also why, you know, we have people who work in different professions
mm-hmm.
who can have very unusual sleep cycles. So they sleep for 4 hours at a time, you know, so, because they go through those cycles twice, and then they can be up for a while.
Okay.
And then they go through those sleep cycles again.
Okay.
And so they're still getting...
Their schedule allows them to do that.
Right. And they're still okay. getting 8 hours of sleep a night. But what they're doing is they're taking advantage of that time when they're almost awake when mm-hmm. they're switching from, say, REM sleep to stage one again.
Right.
They take advantage of that and get up and do some work or, mm-hmm. or take care. We know of, was it Winston Churchill?
Right.
Who slept very little during the wars and stuff. But what he would do is he would make sure that he got enough sleep during those times so he could get through his cycles
right.
to allow his brain to restore. Then he'd get up and he'd
That's right.
work.
He used to sleep in the war room, in the basement of the war room.
Right.
Underground London during World War II. And he had a bed. He had a bedroom
right.
in the war room. He'd go down, he'd sleep, and he'd come back up. So he functioned 24 hours a day, but he was getting this restorative sleep
right.
throughout the day.
He would take advantage of these blocks of time
mm-hmm.
to get through those cycles so that he could be restored
right.
and continue to work.
Back
now,
to work.
He couldn't do a two-hour cycle and then work for 22 hours.
Right. Right.
Because his brain needs more restoring than that.
Right.
But he could do it if he got 2 hours, then work for 4 or 5 hours, then got 2 hours, then and so on.
So when we say you're not getting enough rest, we really mean you have to rest this organ. You have to
right.
rest this brain.
Absolutely.
Because you have to slow down that high level of electrical activity, give it a rest, and then you can come back and gear it up again.
Right.
Okay.
It's just like any other organ. I mean, if you were
That's
running
mm-hmm.
for 8 hours,
right.
at some point you're going to have to stop and let your legs rest.
Right. That's right.
And your brain is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So sleep is critical to allow this restoration. It allows your brain to return to a healthy state. So again, then it can function more adequately.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know that at different ages, different developmental ages, the need for sleep varies. And the way that our biological or circadian rhythm changes at different ages. So we know, for example, that infants and toddlers, they sleep a lot more
mm-hmm.
than teenagers.
Right.
You know, teenagers may need 8 or 9 hours of sleep a night. Infants and toddlers may need up to 12 to 14 hours a night.
Right.
Because we know at those stages of development, during infancy and toddlerhood, the brain is really doing a lot of development. I mean, that's
very active time,
yes.
beginning at about age 2.
Right, right. And even up through age 5,
mm-hmm.
you know, the brain is
right.
changing so much every day that the brain really needs a lot of time to restore itself.
Right.
And so it's not surprising that kids during those ages need more sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they get older, the need for sleep changes. It's still critical, but it does change, and it begins to lessen a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, and what a lot of parents and obviously the school system doesn't understand, is that as we reach adolescence, our entire circadian rhythm mm-hmm. shifts,
yeah.
and it shifts from sort of a 8 in the evening to 6 in the morning type of schedule to more of a midnight to 10 in the morning type of system,
right. Right.
Schedule. And naturally, teenagers' body are sort of built
mm-hmm.
to stay up later at night.
Right.
And this is difficult because, of course, in high school, we make them go to school at 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't understand why high schoolers go to school at 7 o'clock in the morning, but elementary school kids and middle school kids don't go to school until 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning.
They're up. They're awake at that time.
Right.
waiting for the high school kids.
It should be exactly the reverse. High
right.
schoolers should go to school a little bit later in the morning.
And I think this whole issue of circadian rhythm, that's the day-night cycle
right.
that you're referring to when you talk about the circadian rhythm. We, as a species, should go to sleep at night.
Right.
And when it gets dark, and then we should wake up during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of us have that day-night cycle, but it moves in teenagers.
Right.
It changes by about 2 hours
right.
during the teenage years. And then when we enter adulthood, mid-20s or so, it comes back to where it was before.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah.
So the importance of sleep is always there from
mm-hmm.
birth through
right.
adulthood. The,
right.
the importance of sleep is always there. And the consequences of poor sleep
mm.
are the same for young children as it is for adults.
Right.
And there are certain consequences that we know are present when we don't get enough sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So we have things like irritability. I always tell this story to my students when we talk about sleep, because it was probably the most concrete example to me of the importance of sleep, and it actually began my determination to ask about sleep with every patient that I see. It was back when I was working in the Department of Pediatrics, and we were working in the Birth to Three Early Steps program. Mm-hmm. And one day, I was working with a developmental pediatrician. It was a multidisciplinary team, so we were working together, and these two parents brought this little girl, this two-year-old girl. And the parents walk in, and they, you know, had bags under their eyes. They looked very tired and stuff. And this girl walked in, and my goodness. I mean, her hair was, she looked like a banshee. Her hair was up and wild. She was 2 years old. And she was unmanageable. We had a room that was not too big, and she, just her presence increased the temperature in the room by a good 5 or 6 degrees. I mean, she was a sparkler.
Huh?
She was on fire. And she was playing with the toys, but she didn't play with any toy for more than just a couple of seconds. She was throwing toys. She was loud. She was unmanageable. I couldn't do any of the testing that I usually do with kids, even though they're tests designed for that age, so they're interesting and stuff for them. She was not interested in anything. And she was throwing toys and almost broke one of the ceiling tiles with a toy. I mean, she's throwing it out. I was sweating by the end of the the visit. And so while we're talking to the parents, we're trying to figure out what's going on, because the girl, she doesn't use language very well. And again, she's very irritable, very easily agitated, very difficult to manage. And so while we're talking with them, the developmental pediatrician, who was, you know, very smart guy, knew the questions to ask. I was still young in my career, so I there were things that I didn't know to ask. And his question was about sleep. He says, how is she sleeping? And the parents said, well, she sleeps about 45 minutes a night.
Oh my gosh.
And we both paused and we're 45 minutes a night. And they said, yes, the parents would take 4 hour shifts. One parent would sleep for 4 hours while the other one stayed up with her, and then they would switch. And so the parents themselves were only getting about 4 hours sleep a night, because then they would have to go to, one of them would go to work, and the other would try to stay with the girl, and they were trying to get her in daycare, but she kept getting kicked out of daycare and all those kinds of problems. So the parents were sleep deprived, and this girl was only sleeping, you know,
really only 45 minutes.
That's what they said. Only 45 minutes a night. She would start to go to sleep at other times, but within a couple of minutes she was right back awake, and there was no respite for the parents. So because we couldn't really do any other testing or anything like that with her, our first referral was for a sleep study. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the way that system worked at the time is, you know, as far as us, the evaluators, went, we made the assessment, made the recommendations, and then we don't really hear too much back again. So 6 months later, which is the typical reevaluation time span, this girl shows up again. And I don't think that I would have recognized her had I not remembered the name. Because, you know, you kind of associate those traumatic incidents with
some names you do remember.
She came in, the parents looked wonderful, the girl looked wonderful, I was able to do all of my testing, and we said, what happened? And the parents said that they weren't even going to bring her, because all of their concerns were completely gone. They did a sleep study, and they found out that she had this very minor malformation in her throat that was, anytime she laid down and was going to sleep, it would cut off oxygen, and so it would make her wake back up, almost like an apnea type of thing.
So she had sleep apnea.
Obstructive sleep apnea. They did a minor outpatient surgery, just kind of cut that out. She started sleeping, and every behavior went away immediately because she was sleeping. She started talking more. She was less irritable. She was more compliant. She was on a schedule. She was able to attend daycare. Mm-hmm. And again, the parents said that the only reason that they came for the follow-up was they wanted us to see the difference that a good sleep made for her. Mm-hmm. So that started me on this, again, increased my determination. Okay, I'm going to ask about sleep for everybody. Any kid that comes in is irritable, I need to find out about their sleep.
I do too. Kids who have ADHD or who are being seen for conduct disorder or oppositional defiant disorder, I always ask about sleep now.
Yeah.
You raise an interesting point, though, and that is that obstructive sleep apnea is one of the medical conditions that can interfere with sleep.
Right.
But there aren't many medical conditions that interfere with sleep.
Right.
There's only two or three
right.
in children that will interfere with sleep. And so typically it's not, I mean, you have to rule out a medical problem.
Right.
But once that's been ruled out, there are only a handful. There are three physical problems that can interrupt sleep. The rest of it is just good sleep hygiene.
Right.
And good sleep habits.
And hers, obviously, 45 minutes a night, was a pretty severe case.
Yeah,
which
really, I've never heard of 45 minutes.
Yeah, which leads us to believe, okay, so there must be something physiologically wrong. Because at some point, the parents are going to sleep, which would hopefully increase the likelihood that she would sleep, you know, as far as sleep hygiene goes and everything. But yeah, it was remarkable. Mm-hmm. And so when sleep habits are that problematic, yes, we refer for sleep studies and those kinds of things, because we got to figure out what's going on with that.
Right.
Sometimes seizures interfere with sleep and those kinds of things. But otherwise, like you said, a lot of times it just really comes down to good sleep hygiene.
Right.
I only mentioned seizures because, you know, seizures are most likely to happen when we're very bored, or when we're very bored, overstimulated,
or too stimulated,
or very sleepy. Mm-hmm. When we're really tired, we're at risk for seizures. And so a lot of times when kids have seizure disorders, they come about at night when they're really tired. And, it's like sending a jolt through the brain.
Right. And seizures tend to occur during that transition from wakefulness as we move into sleep. So they occur at stage one and stage two. So when we're going into sleep and when we're coming out of sleep is when the brain is most likely to have a seizure.
Right. And so you can imagine, here you are trying to relax and all of a sudden, boom, there's a bolt of electricity going through your brain, and now you're awake.
Right.
And so you're not going to get back to sleep. So you're right. There's only a few real medical conditions that affect sleep. Otherwise, it's good sleep hygiene. But inadequate sleep affects development. It affects irritability. It affects attentiveness. You mentioned ADHD a moment ago. Mm-hmm. We know that a lot of kids who have symptoms associated with ADHD, or often attributed to ADHD, a lot of that can be explained by sleep.
That's right.
You know, if they're not getting enough rest, that's a problem. Cognitive sharpness. You know, people who don't sleep well have difficulty with decision making. They don't problem solve very well. They have difficulties putting pieces together. So we talked a few podcasts ago about executive function skills.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All of your executive function skills are compromised when you don't get good sleep.
Right.
So you have all of those issues associated with poor sleep. Other things like your weight. We rarely associate those things. We were talking about diet a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not sleeping well, your body is under a state of stress.
Right.
I'm going to say that again. When you don't sleep well, you put your body into a state of stress. And when your body is in a state of stress, it holds weight. It stores fat. It doesn't allow all of your systems to function the way that they need to function. So you're not getting rid of the toxins that you need to get rid of through your digestive system and all that kind of stuff. So we get sick when we don't have a good sleep routine. So there's a lot of physical, mental, emotional, cognitive ramifications for not getting enough sleep. So we really need to make sure that we follow some good sleep hygiene and we maintain good sleep habits. This is especially important, bringing it back to kids. With the start of school, we need to be in good sleep habits because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's possible to overestimate the value of sleep or the need for sleep.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's just no way that we can overemphasize the importance of that.
Right.
It's related to everything kids do in school, from their mood, their behavior, their cognitive abilities, academic performance. Everything that kids do in school could be affected by poor sleep.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk then about what do we mean by good sleep hygiene. Good sleep hygiene begins with a routine.
Right.
And
that's
so what,
number one.
Yeah. So what we encourage our parents and patients to do is to develop a strong, consistent sleep routine.
Right. And that's why we recommend, I think in the column, one of your recent columns, about getting kids into that routine prior to the start of school.
Right.
So that they get accustomed to going to bed at the same time and getting up at the same time. And then you want to keep them on that schedule every day.
Every day.
Including weekends.
Right.
That's the challenge for parents, is that you want to maintain this schedule even when the weekends are here.
Right. Yeah. You know, we often hear about parents, you know, they have their kids going to bed at 9 o'clock
right.
Sunday through Thursday, and then on Friday night they stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. So you're undoing the very thing that you
right.
you needed to maintain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It
so be
work
careful.
Out.
That's a battle though.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to admit that in some houses it's going to be a battle to get the kids. But if you can keep them on that schedule 7 days a week.
Or as close as possible.
Close as you can.
Because everybody right. wants to sleep in a little bit on Saturday right. and Sunday mornings.
Right.
Unless you have a away soccer match on Saturday morning.
Right.
We have to drive an hour and a half this weekend to go to my son's soccer match.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it's at 11 o'clock in the morning, so we have right. to...
Well, you know, the other, when you mentioned Saturdays and Sundays, if you're going to let your kids sleep in, let them, it's better to sleep in on Saturday.
Right.
Because when you get off cycle on Sunday, it's going to make Monday more difficult.
Monday's more difficult.
So what we would recommend is, if you're going to stay up late and sleep in, do it Friday and Saturday.
Right.
And then get back on routine Saturday night and Sunday morning. Because
right.
then that's going to make Monday easier.
Monday's easier.
Otherwise, Monday's going to be a battle. Getting to bed. Because if a kid is staying in bed until noon or 1 on Sunday, they're not going to be ready to go to bed at 8 or 9 o'clock.
Right.
They're going to want to stay up later.
Right.
They stay up later, they have trouble falling asleep, then they have trouble getting awakening on Monday morning.
Right.
So if you let your kids sleep in, try to let them sleep in on Saturday rather than Sunday.
Yeah. So that's the first part of the schedule, is you need to sit down and you need to think what is going to be the most appropriate bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, the most appropriate bedtime is determined by what time you have to get up the next morning.
Exactly.
So if you need to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning...
Which is what many high school students are doing.
You need to think, okay, now let's go backwards 8 or 9 hours.
To?
That would be 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Right?
I don't think most 16-year-olds are going to want to go to bed at 8 o'clock.
Right. They're not going to want
wow.
to. So you know, when we're thinking about this, it is, we recognize this is really a potential battlefield.
Wow.
Because high schoolers, you know, I have high schoolers who are still doing homework at 8
absolutely.
O'clock at night. So, you know.
Where they're still at practice.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
So it's we recognize that it's not easy. And so in some of those cases, you have to consider other alternatives, whether you have, not that this introduces the potential for other issues, but whether you need to introduce naps and things
yeah.
like that to give
yeah.
them some of that restorative rest at another part of the day.
Right.
But because most teenagers aren't going to bed until 10 or 11 o'clock.
It really is a conundrum.
Right.
Because even if your child gets up at 6... To get 9 hours of sleep, she'd have to be asleep by 9.
Right.
And most teenagers are not ready to go to sleep at 9.
They're not going
to
do that.
This really is it's a biological battle, but it's also a family struggle.
Right, right.
Okay.
It's easier, of course, with elementary school kids.
Yeah.
I used air quotes when I say easier,
mm-hmm.
because we have more control over
right.
our elementary school kids.
And their circadian rhythms haven't shifted.
Right.
So they
right.
are ready to go to sleep earlier.
Right. So when we think about what time we have to get up in the morning, then we count backwards to figure out about what time the bedtime needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in deciding what time they have to get up in the morning, I think we need to be realistic about that time.
Yeah.
I have friends who, you know, the kid doesn't catch the bus until 7:30,
right.
But they get them up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, you probably could push that a little bit later so that you don't have to battle getting them to bed at, you
right.
know, 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the,
right.
the night before.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably push that a little bit. It might, if you just clean up the morning routine a little bit, if you make that one more routine, more streamlined,
right.
then oftentimes you can allow a little bit more sleep in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So once you know what time the bedtime is, though, that's when, again, you just continue to work backwards. Right. You think about, all right, what do we have to do before bed? We think about showers and baths. We think about mm-hmm. brushing teeth. We think about winding down. Mm-hmm. Richard, there's a lot of talk now about blue light. Have you heard about blue light?
I have heard about blue light.
Blue light is
it's a fascinating topic.
It is. And
I love this whole discussion.
I know. I would have never thought about it.
Okay, honestly. First of all, what is blue light?
Blue light is exactly what we think of as blue light.
The color blue.
The color blue. And the reason that it's gaining so much attention, and that why blue in particular is so important, is because when we think about our brain and how our brain has evolved over time,
right.
We have, as we've mentioned before, we have evolved socially and technologically much faster than we have evolved biologically.
Right.
So our biological brain still functions in many of the same ways that it did back in the Paleolithic area,
right.
Which is why the paleo diet is so...
That's right.
So
whether it works or not, it's popular.
It's popular.
Right.
So
you've all heard of the paleo diet. So we're talking about paleo days here for
right.
sleep.
Pre-industrial.
Right.
Our brain still works in much the same way as it did back then. Before there was technology, before there was electricity, mm-hmm. Before we had any of those things that...
Right.
allow us to see at night.
That's right. As wonderful as the incandescent light bulb is and what it provides, it did serve this single disadvantage of allowing us to stay up when it got dark.
Right.
Because prior to the invention of that, the electric light, when it got dark, people tend to sleep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the biggest indicator of daytimeness, meaning awake time,
right.
is the blue sky.
So that's where the blue light comes
from.
That's
where the blue light comes from.
So we trace back to when the sky is blue.
We're supposed to be awake.
It's time to get up.
And when the blue sky goes away, when it becomes dark outside,
night.
It's bedtime. It's time
so
to go to sleep.
So blue is awake. Black is asleep.
Asleep.
Okay.
And so when we think about it that way, again, we know that our brain functions that way. We have a chemical in our brain called mm-hmm. melatonin. You've all seen it on the shelves.
Our
friend melatonin.
Right.
Lovingly referred to as the Dracula hormone. I love that.
The Dracula hormone.
The Dracula hormone.
Because it only comes out at night.
It only comes out at night.
Right.
And it only comes out, not just at night, but when your biology perceives night.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't have a clock inside that says, oh, it's 9 o'clock.
It
must be time
PM.
To come out.
Right.
It looks at the time based upon the amount of light that right. is influencing your body.
Mm-hmm.
And our body absorbs that light in
right.
not just our eyes, but in through our skin and in different ways. And so when we are exposing ourselves to especially blue light into the nighttime, it... keeps our brain awake. It doesn't allow our brain to release melatonin, which induces sleep. Melatonin is...
So when we're exposed to blue light, melatonin doesn't get released.
Correct.
As long as we're exposed to blue light, melatonin doesn't get released.
Right,
okay.
right. Even if you take a melatonin supplement, it's
right.
not going to work effectively enough as effectively mm-hmm. as it could, as long as you're being exposed to blue light.
Right.
Now, what's the biggest sources of blue light?
Computers.
Computers.
Cell phones. iPads.
There they are.
All the things we take to bed.
And TVs. All the things that we look at.
The TV is also blue light.
All the things that we look at while we're laying in bed. We
mm-hmm.
think, you know what, I'll just lay in bed and I'll just check my emails just before bed, or I'm going to watch, you know, the kids watch YouTube videos and things like
right.
that while they're laying in bed. And we think, okay, that's going to wind them down. It may
just
not
be
winding them down as much as we think or would like it to.
Hmm. Okay.
Instead, it's exposing them to the blue light, which is going to keep their brain active, and it's going to make it more and more difficult for them to relax and to release the melatonin that they need to go to
sleep. So all those parent-child battles about don't take your phone to bed, the parents were right.
Right.
They may not have known why.
Right.
But this is the explanation.
Yeah.
That it's the blue light It's not only the thing going off and buzzing, and because their friends will stay up. They have, you know, some kids do stay up throughout the night.
Right.
And they will be interrupting. So it's not just that. It's that the blue light is interfering with the release of melatonin.
Right. And the way that technology works today, even if they're, even if their friends aren't, even if their friends aren't staying up, quote unquote, late, because of the way we play with, play video games with people from all over the world, they may be interacting with people from China. It's daytime in China.
So it's morning in Germany when it's nighttime here.
Right.
You know, they're sick.
And so they're interacting with people who are perhaps during their wakeful time anyways, but it's during their nighttime sleep. So, so you know, it's really good. As part of good sleep hygiene, we really need to work to remove the electronics at least 45 minutes before you expect them to go to sleep. At least 45 minutes. That allows the brain time to...
That's interesting because people who take melatonin take it about 45 minutes before they want to fall asleep.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And that just seems to be the time frame needed.
So it takes about
to recover.
About that amount of time to transition. This is that transition from wakefulness to sleep again.
Right.
So you want to cool off, slow down those the electrical activity in the brain.
Right.
Melatonin does that.
Right.
Okay.
Right. We have to deal with the electronics issue. And there's been some recent research that says really the biggest culprits of blue light are iPhones and iPads.
Okay.
Those seem to have the most influence based upon some more recent research.
Okay.
So we really, and I love my iPhone, I love my iPad, but we really have
don't
to do a
better job.
Don't
take them into the bedroom.
Right. Right. Okay. The other thing, another thing that's part of good sleep hygiene, so we have a good schedule. We have removal of electronics.
Blue light.
The next thing is temperature. It's good to sleep. We're more likely to fall asleep when it's cooler. Our body naturally decreases in temperature when we're asleep.
Mm-hmm.
It should make sense. It's not working as hard and those kinds of things.
Right.
And so when we're in a cooler setting, a dark and cool setting, our body is much more likely to relax and we can fall asleep easier when it's a little bit cooler outside or in the room that we're in. And again, this is part of biology. You know, when we lived in the prairies, and it was cold at night.
Got cooler at night.
Right.
Okay.
So that's part of our biology, working with our biology to induce good sleep habits.
Right.
Another thing that I often recommend for people is before you lay down to go to sleep, write your to-do list. This is especially for adults, adults who may have difficulty getting to sleep. Many times we get in bed and we lay there and we start thinking about all the things we have to do tomorrow. We need to purge that before we even lay down. So sitting there before you lay down to go to bed, sitting there and doing your to-do list, all the things that you have to do for tomorrow, just get it all out. As best you can before you even lay down, so that when it comes up, you can. I got that on the list. I can put.
So
that
you're
aside.
You're not fretting about what you have to do tomorrow and should I get out of bed and make my list and all.
Right.
Do that. I like the word purge.
Right.
Purge all that, and it'll help you to relax.
Right. Okay. Right. Because then you know that it's there. You know that you have it down, and you don't have to worry about it so much. Another thing that makes up good sleep hygiene, and this is understandably more difficult with children, but so especially for maybe teenagers, but especially for adults, for good sleep hygiene, is don't toss and turn. If you're laying in bed and you're not able to get to sleep, get up, do something, go to the bathroom, get a drink of water, do something about it. We get into these habits of laying in bed and we just toss and turn. And, you know, if we want to think about how we're training our body from a behavioral perspective, we're training our body that this is a place that we can just lay down and we're not going to sleep. And it's just making it worse and worse because, of course, the longer that we lay there not asleep, the more frustrated we get that we can't go to sleep. And then the less likely we are to be able to relax to go to sleep. And so it is a cascade of events that makes it worse.
Right. Yeah, I had a young woman say that the other day. That if she doesn't get to sleep right away, she starts to fret about not getting enough sleep, and then she can't get to sleep.
Right.
You know, and there's this vicious cycle.
Yeah, yeah. So if you can't get to sleep in a good amount of time...
What is a good amount of time? What do you recommend?
Usually it's usually we can get to sleep in 5 to 10 minutes.
Right.
If you're laying there for 15 or 20 minutes and you're not...
By the time you get to 15 minutes,
right,
probably time to get up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get up and do something.
Right.
And then nothing strenuous, nothing that's going to be more stimulating.
So don't get up and go to your computer.
Right.
Because if you do that, you're headed in the wrong direction again. Right.
Okay. Don't turn on the TV, get a drink of water, glass of milk or something, and then... relax and then try again.
Right.
Don't turn all the lights on. Don't do all that kind of stuff because that's just going to reset everything. And and you want to do that. I encourage people to sleep with some kind of sounds.
Yeah, white noise.
White noise, ocean fans. Sounds, right. Fans, those kinds of things. Those things are good because it reduces anxiety, reduces stress that sometimes comes about with complete silence.
And it calms all that electrical activity in your brain, that continuous sound. Your brain sort of habituates to that, gets on that same cycle.
Right, right. I also recommend, and again, this is more than for children, is I recommend and encourage parents not to use bed for punishment.
Oh, exactly.
It blows my mind
when
parents say, you know, well... I put him in timeout. Well, what do you do for timeout? Well, I make him lay in his bed for timeout. Okay, what you're doing is you're making bedtime, the time that you're in bed, a punishment.
Right.
And so if the child begins to associate being in bed with being in trouble, is it really surprising that you're having a difficult time at 8:30, 9 o'clock getting him to go to bed?
Right. It feels like punishment then, too.
It feels like punishment. So you really... It's important just to use bed just for sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use it for, ideally you don't use it for play area. Ideally homework. You don't use it for homework. Ideally you don't use it for punishment because bedtime, the bed needs to be for bed, for sleep.
Right.
When we use it for other things, it often
confuses children, especially young children.
Yep. Right, right. So use the bed just for sleep. That's really important. And finally, you know, we have to think about, as part of good sleep hygiene, what we're ingesting before we go to bed.
You're talking about foods.
Foods, mm-hmm. what kind
beverages,
of drinks,
right.
And even supplements. We talked about melatonin a minute ago, and we'll talk about it here in just a second. But, you know, you don't want the child to eat anything that's going to be stimulating before bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, things that, you know, we think, oftentimes... If we step back and thought about it, we're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Not to give them candy or something high in carbohydrates or high in sugar before bedtime. That makes sense when we step back and think about it.
Right.
But yet we don't hesitate to give our kid a Pop-Tart at 8 o'clock at night as they're getting ready for as their bedtime snack.
Right.
They're loaded with carbohydrates, loaded with sugar, and then that stimulates things. And so you don't you don't want to do that. A banana is great. A banana has tryptophan in it. Tryptophan is serotonin, and serotonin is what makes melatonin. And so we need to think about healthy snacks. And sure, bananas have some sugar in it, but it's a different kind of sugar than the processed sugar that gets into our blood system so quickly. I've given my kids, because they don't mind it, slices of turkey for a nighttime snack. Sometimes cheese is okay for a nighttime snack. Because again, the tryptophan in milk, so glasses of milk. That's why, you know, that warm glass of milk, the warmth sort of helps release some of the chemicals that helps us
go
to sleep.
Releases the tryptophan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thinking about that, you know, no glasses of tea, no Cokes or Pepsis before bedtime. Stay away from the caffeine. Stay away from the sugar. Mm-hmm. Stay away from that stuff as your nighttime snacks.
Right.
And then melatonin. We talked about melatonin, how it naturally occurs. Melatonin supplements are really beneficial.
Right.
It really helps some people get to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said earlier, you know, taking it about 45 minutes before you want to lay down is the ideal time if you're then following the other sleep hygiene tips. You know, you can't take melatonin and then sit on the computer and drink Pepsi for the next hour and expect to then just lay down and go to sleep. Of course, the melatonin's not going to work then.
Right.
You have to use it while practicing these other good sleep hygiene practices.
Mm-hmm. While we're on the idea of medications or supplements, there are some medications that make people drowsy.
Right.
And sometimes parents will use those, give antihistamines,
Benadryl,
decongestants, and many parents resort to Benadryl, I think that's something that you really ought to run by your child's pediatrician.
Right.
Don't just start giving Benadryl every night. I would run that one by your child's pediatrician as to the advisability of using Benadryl to get your child to sleep.
Absolutely.
It may be worth it because sleep is so important, mm-hmm. and it may be worth whatever side effects the medication may have. But I would run that one by melatonin. I think is safe.
Right.
But you may want to talk to your child's pediatrician about Benadryl.
That's a great point, and definitely talk to the pediatrician. What I often hear pediatricians say is, if you do it every once in a while, it's okay.
That's right.
But you're absolutely right.
You want to give Benadryl every night.
Right.
You know, so
right.
Be careful with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a great point. Obviously, there's prescription strength medications that are used for sleep. We won't really go into those here just because you would have to get those from your physician. But oftentimes, they're of the antidepressant family, mm-hmm. like trazodone. It's very commonly used. And then, of course, as you get into adulthood, you have Ambien and some of those other sleep-specific medications.
Right.
But they introduce their own problems.
Right. That's right. There's going to be a trade-off if you start relying. What we always recommend is there are many, many things you can do to move from wakefulness to sleep and to get to sleep and to stay asleep before you resort to medication. So I would try all these things that we just talked about before resorting to medication.
Right, right. So again, we're a week down for the school year, at least in this area. Today marks the last day of the first week of school. Only 175 days left.
Nothing to it.
So working to sort of tighten up your sleep habits, fixing your sleep routines, getting all of that in order, I think, is going to make a tremendous difference.
Right.
You're going to get some resistance,
mm-hmm.
right? That's safe to say, right?
From your children.
From your child.
Right.
You're going to get some resistance.
And you're
going to
get more from teenagers.
Right.
Because of the biology of this, of circadian rhythms.
Right.
So it's not because they're teenagers or they're bad or they don't love you. It's because their biological clock shifts, and this is a much tougher battle with teens.
Right. And so if you're having a tough time, you know, get some help, get some support.
Give us a call. Right.
We try to help out with that here at the office. Because as we said earlier, in regards to teenagers, you're not going to get your teenager to go to bed at 8 o'clock.
Right, right.
You're probably not at 9 o'clock. So we need to work to find some other alternatives, some other strategies. And so come in if you have any questions, give our office a call. We have a number of people here that can help with that.
And speaking of teens, you know, we want our teenagers to be actively involved in school. But the more involved they are, the busier they are,
right.
the less time, you know, it just compounds itself. So,
right.
you know, we want them to be doing all those things, but it's going to interfere with sleep.
Right. So we'll have to do something else.
Give us a
that.
Call if we can help with that.
Yeah. So write to us. Let us know how you're doing with it. You know, if you have any questions, let us know. We didn't do our announcements at the beginning of the podcast, but remember on September 18th, we have a workshop coming up. In Bartow on anxiety. We're really looking forward to it. It's a 3-hour workshop. If you have any interest in that, check out our website at pacflorida.com. Click on workshops and you'll see all the information there. You can register. We're offering continuing education credits for licensed mental health counselors, licensed clinical social workers, and licensed marriage and family therapists. We also can provide some documentation for teachers who would like to seek any type of in-service credit from their administration. We're happy to provide that. But we're going to do the presentation sort of for everyone. We're going to present information at a level that both therapists, teachers, and parents can understand. So we really encourage you to come if you have any interest in learning more about anxiety and how that affects our body. Check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheMentalBreakdown. We also have one for Psychological Associates of Central Florida. We have Twitter. We have Pinterest now. Both of those are at Dr. Bernie.
Every time I think of Pinterest, I think of needlepoint and scrapbooking.
That's the thing, is it's a little pin. And that's what it's about.
That's
you're pinning things. I haven't posted much yet because I'm still trying to figure out how to use that for our work. But
have enough gingham cloth to do Pinterest.
I got it. I'm gonna figure it out this weekend. So okay. Check those things out. We also have a newsletter that we're now doing.
That's right.
You can get that at packflorida.com. They're over on the right hand side. There's a place where you can sign up to get our monthly newsletter, and you'll get all kinds of information there about upcoming events, upcoming things that we're going to be talking about, and some in the news types of information right. about mental health concerns. So I think that's everything. October, we have our open house.
That's right.
So keep your eye out for that, because we're really excited about our open house.
Right.
We're going to open the doors for everybody to come in and see what we're doing here and see how we might be able to help you and what you have going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else?
Busy time.
Yeah. Yep. It's a very busy time.
Let us know about school.
Yes.
We'll be talking more about that as we go along. We'll bring these subjects up periodically with what's going on in school. This is the year of Common Core.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere.
We're doing some research on that. So, we're going to
be talking about Common Core. If you have any questions about Common Core, give us a call. We're going to be doing some work with that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So... Lots of things planned, mm-hmm. lots of things going on, lots of things to talk about.
Right.
So
join the conversation.
Yes.
We'd love to hear from you.
That would be great. If you get the opportunity to jump on iTunes and write us a review, any review would be great. It helps increase our visibility so other people can find out about us. You know, that's one interesting thing right now about iTunes is we really have no idea how many people
right.
listen to our podcast. Right. Unless we hear from you through a message on Facebook or a blog or through iTunes, we really don't have any idea how many people listen to the podcast. So let us know you're out there. Even if it's a review that just says, hey, we listen to the podcast. It doesn't have to be good or bad. Just say, hey, we listen. That'd be great just so we know that you're out there. And certainly let us know if there's any particular topics you'd like us to talk about or you'd like to hear our thoughts about. So, all right. Well, is that it?
Well, there's a hurricane brewing in the Gulf or in somewhere. Erica?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that. Keep yourself safe.
Yes. So until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great week. Enjoy the weekend because more homework next week, I'm sure.
Exactly. That's right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Mental Breakdown. If you want more information, you can check out our website at www.pacflorida.com. The Mental Breakdown is sponsored in part by theledger.com, where you can read our weekly column in the live section. Our podcasts are available for download on iTunes, and you can follow us on our YouTube channel and Facebook. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to send us messages either through our website or on Facebook. You can send us questions or topics you would like for us to address on future podcasts. Drs. Bernie and Richard are available for workshops, so you can contact us for more information. Thank you for listening, and until next time, stay mentally healthy.